Okay, keep it very brief. First of all, look at the notes in row 19. Peter, row 19 notes. We reconstituted some of the dimensions. In fact, in particular, formal slash structure. We moved structure to structure granularity. Again, you know, it depends on how the rest of the groups gauge this, but we had some problems trying to define that, especially structure from a semantic point of view. So we basically...
You are the only participant in this conference. Press any key to continue this conference.
So...
Press any key to continue this conference.
We don't even have a key.
So we just made it formal, informal to formal, with no specified scale, if you will. We had originally proposed semi-formal, but nobody liked that either. We called it that. Because we considered formal meaning maybe has a model theory. I know there's issues with that. Therefore, we really punted simply because we thought, well, taxonomies, thesauri, we'd like to say that they're partially formal, but we couldn't really characterize the definition of formal there. So we moved structure then into granularity. So it basically became something like structure slash granularity. You increase in structure. There's a loose correspondence to maybe increasing informality if you keep that as a continuum. It's also partially correlated with expressiveness because expressiveness is focused on a language. And we thought that expressiveness, if we tolerated non-language and just talked about frameworks that could be formalized into a language but hadn't been, say, taxonomies, ontologies, topic maps, they're not really formal because there's really no language slash logic behind them, but they could be still expressed as, if somebody wanted to do the effort as to construct a language for them. And then granularity and structure basically means something that has less granularity might mean that you have just a taxonomy within, let's say, an owl ontology where you're just using subclassing without any other relations, properties, et cetera, restrictions. That would be less granular than, and especially if you only had a few of those classes, subclasses. If you increased your structure, granularity became more finer grained, it would probably mean something like you have additional relations, perhaps you have many axioms. We'd like to characterize that with a metric. We thought maybe something like axioms per term, but we couldn't really characterize it in the time we had. So average axiom per term as a gauge of structure granularity, with the caveat that you would have to do something to probably transform some constructs into an axiom that may not be essentially axiomatized. So the result is the groupings class A, basic formal ontology, we characterized it as formal. In fact, all of these are formal. So in the interest of time, we're focusing on BFO, SUMO, engineering math, COSMO, and PSL, process specification language. Expressiveness, first order logic for all except COSMO at this point. We're going with what Pat said, which was swirl, owl plus swirl. Structure, again, relatively low slash limited for basic formal ontology, but axiomatized. So in principle, BFO intends to be small. So in this definition, perhaps of granularity, it's less granular by almost by definition. Sumo, medium, simply because it's mostly upper and middle, but there may be, in fact, few axioms per term. Engineering math, we consider that high. It's a relatively constrained domain, even though it's maybe a more abstract domain focusing on math, engineering math in particular, but the level of structure granularity is high. Cosmo, low, by definition, mostly terminology at this point, eventually to become axiomatized more, but low grain, low structure. PSL, medium.
Quick question.
Sure.
When you say sumo, are you assuming sumo plus Milo?
Well, initially we considered sumo alone, but then we thought, we could probably actually include Milo in that, simply because it's an elaboration, but maybe in the same way that sumo is fairly few axioms per term. But again, some of these are judgment calls. Reasoning, yes, across the board. They were all interested or supporting reasoning or intend to have reasoning. Descriptive, prescriptive, which might be loose, strict. BFO, strict. Sumo, strict. Engineering math, strict. Cosmo, loose. And PSL, strict. Missing value. Design methodology, top down for basic, for BFO. Sumo, by definition, is a merger, so we just use that as a value. It's both top down and bottom up, depending upon what you look at that went into the merger. Engineering math, mostly top down, meaning we have a firm idea of the mathematics, knowledge about the domain, hence use that to formalize. Cosmo, relatively ad hoc at this point, and PSL, top down.
Thank you.
All right, great. Thanks, Leo. So Group B, I'll represent Thomas Vanderwall and Tom Gruber. A couple of high-level points. We kind of found that we were on the corner, like the boundary case of this space. What we were representing were four ontologies, three that were actually were boundary cases, Delicious, which is a classic folksonomy. We have little word documents for each of these. And then WordNet and Dublin Core, which we'll discuss in a second, but they also are way down there in the fairly unstructured end of things. And then something called tag ontology, which is I'll get to as a punchline. If you reduce the view, this one comes up 125% by default. Thanks, the wisdom of Word there. Okay, so and the Delicious. What's interesting here is this: if we remember, we were trying to come up with what elucidate the units of measure or the scale for these dimensions, and also test the dimensions. And there, this was either this was a good zero point, or maybe it just showed that. The level of structure, there just wasn't any structure. I mean, there's not going to be any structure in the way the structure was defined in the paper, because there was no formalization of any kind. There's not supposed to be. Remember, this is viewing a folksonomy as an ontology, not as a data set. So if you thought of folksonomy as if God or evolution had created it, then it has no formalization in it. The expressiveness of the representation is kind of also a red herring, because there is no representation other than a single relation, which is X tagged Y with a label Z. There's a little bit more to it, but it's basically one relation. Again, the representation of granularity. Again, this one started to really melt down on all of our examples. We could never make sense of it, really. If anything, we were on the very coarse end of this thing. Because you would say, you might use a tag to say all kinds of different things. And that was really encompassed, it was a very blunt tool as a representation. What I found that was the most valuable two dimensions for that was came out of this was, and this is dimensions not so not these are the dimensions in the sense that we were talking yesterday of how can we understand what ontologies are by talking about dimensions, not how do we get some matrix right, but how do we understand ontology? And intended use and role of reasoning were very, very instructive in understanding the ontologies here. And in this case, if you look at folksonomy as an ontology, its intended use, actually design is also important, its intended use is has two different interesting, has an intended use as an individual's tool, and has an intended use as an emergent phenomenon for a group. The second unintended but consequential use is this, it's a feed-forward mechanism into taxonomy or control vocabulary development, and various people using it that way. The role of reasoning was also instructive. Even though it had absolutely no structure, essentially just a relation, there was a lot of things you could do on a relation. You can join and pivot and project and filter all kinds of different ways, and that's what people do. And you can also aggregate. You can count up, and you can statistically aggregate over the sets on that relation. So there's an awful lot you could do with that reasoning, just with that simple representation. And the final bit of there was the design methodology, and this is interesting. This was designed in the same way that fruit flies are designed. Well, not a bad example. Normal animals are designed. And that is, in other words, they're not designed; they're evolved. And this one emerged. And that's essentially the defining characteristic of folksonomy as ontology, that it is a completely emergent thing. Now, the two other exemplars down that corner of the space are WordNet and Dublin Core. Dublin Core, as most of you know, is just a vocabulary, and it has no formal semantics at all. But boy, is it well documented. Yes, you'd like to say something, Denise?
I'm sorry. I'm a former member of the Board of Trustees of the Dublin Core, so when you're finished, I'd like to sort of disagree with your characterization just now.
Why don't you just say what it is? You're the authority. Say what it is.
Well, the Dublin Core is a set of about 15 attributes which have syntax. They have, in some cases, there is a specification for the controlled vocabulary. In other cases, it is totally open and totally fluid. And people have trouble defining even what a particular attribute is, such as subject. Okay, date is a little bit better. Okay, title, author, etc. But it's a core set of metadata, which is a faceted taxonomy. Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
So it's a faceted vocabulary, but clearly it has
taxonomy.
It's a taxonomy.
In other words, there's no vocabulary.
None. But there's taxonomy implies hierarchy. No.
No, taxonomy does not imply hierarchy. A biological taxonomy is represented as a hierarchy. Okay, but a taxonomy. There are five different types of taxonomies. That's one of our major problems here. We haven't started out with clean definitions. We've all come with our own assumptions, and we've overlaid our own assumptions and prejudices on the discussion. So I think the conclusion of this workshop, from my perspective, is that whatever anybody walks away with is going to be the result. We are not going to have a consensus. We are not going to be merging opinions at all.
Okay. Well, that's a good point of Peter?
Maybe could we sort of request Denise to redo the dimensions for Dublin Core in particular?
Well, no, it's
we'll sidetrack. I think he should continue. I think Tom should continue. It's just that once in a while, when something is so off, I just want to raise my hand and say, I'm not sure that's quite right. Okay, so but.
And that's fair. I mean, the point of this exercise of going through the examples is to stress the framework and so on. So obviously we have different interpretations among this group of what the word taxonomy and the word vocabulary mean. So we need to probably put a star on that and clarify that which word sense we mean of those words. And that's a good point. So Dublin Core is an example of those things that Denise said. Some people might call it this or that. But the interesting point is that even though it's amazingly well documented, and I've obviously gone through just torturous standardization processes, what you end up with is 15 words. How many are there then? Not 15?
They're not words. They're actually attributes and specifications.
15 attributes and specifications, okay. But the actual values are not really constrained by any formal or operational semantics. Is that correct?
It depends. It depends
Denise,
on the particular attribute.
Yeah. I mean,
thanks.
So control vocabulary is a taxonomy, but a taxonomy is not a control vocabulary.
It's fine. We'll call it. So we would call it a taxonomy then.
No, sorry. It's a faceted.
Faceted taxonomy. Okay. All right. So anyway, but I just read the documents and made sense of them best I could. The other one was WordNet, and WordNet is interesting in that it is a kind of a database like a corpus and like a dictionary might be, and it's also can like folks' onomies can be used as an ontology. The insight we got from this one was that we could put a unit on the scale of expressiveness here, which is essentially this is the equivalent where folksonomy needed the equivalence of a relational database. This one needed the equivalence of a semantic net. In other words, you needed to have nodes and typed arcs with no semantics, just nodes and typed arcs. I mean, no formal semantics, names. Some of them had no formal semantics, but no implied formal semantics. So, in other words, some of them actually say there's an axiom, this is a subclass or something like that. The point is that there's sort of this level of representation where you just need nodes and typed arcs. And then there's another level that goes beyond where you have all kinds of fancy subsumption and so on, right? So this one seemed to just need that representational level, which was interesting. The other thing about it is that they were very explicit about their intended use too. The designers of this thing said, this is for natural language processing. And that really helps them understand when they're getting it right or not, which I think is a really important insight. Okay. Do you have any comments? Anyone open on that?
I agree that WordNet is what we would call a networked taxonomy, a network structured taxonomy, as opposed to Dublin Core, which is a metadata scheme, which is a faceted taxonomy. They are different. The semantics of what I would call the semantic relationships of a faceted taxonomy are different than the semantic relationships of a network taxonomy. But that still doesn't say anything about the rigor or nature of the relationships. I'm not sure that makes any sense to anybody who hasn't worked with it.
So. The final one we actually volunteered, actually, you have to refresh yourself. There it is, tag ontology. So tag ontology is interesting. This is actually about tag data, but it's not the same as a folksonomy. It's actually the enabling ontology to share folksonomies, in particular to share them across heterogeneous systems. And this one has the interesting property that it's actually relatively clean. I mean, in terms of it, like it has a very small number of relations, but the semantics are fairly well spelled out. Now, not spelled out so much in axioms, but they're spelled out fairly well in conceptualization. Sort of like Dublin Core, people have good words to say what they mean for some of those words, okay, some of those facets. So anyway, the interesting thing about the tag, there are already existing tag ontologies, and this particular effort was to sort of build on them and consolidate and extend. This is a good foil against which to compare folksonomy. Because you say, this may also be true of things like WordNet, where there's a WordNet ontology for the N relations, whatever they are. There's like 10 or something relations. And they have a kind of semantics. And then there's like the corpus, which is the instantiation of those relations on 200,000 synsets. And the tag ontology stands in the same relation. It has a small number of relations and concepts, in the order of a dozen or so, and yet you can apply it to millions and millions of records of tag data, which then in turn some people could look at as sort of a corpus like a WordNet. So we see we've sort of highlighted that there's two kinds of ontologies as a result. So those are the highlights of the findings. There's documents here that I read pretty quickly, so if you want to get a rundown, just zip through them. That was Group C. Group B. Group C is, anyone have a handle on that? Who was Group C?
The group that's
what? Way behind?
The group that's kind of pointing at each other.
Oh, okay. Who's getting stuck?
This group, we attacked two different models which could be considered ontologies. Unfortunately, nobody in the group was really an expert on either, so we'll try to fumble through this as best we can. What we did was we ranked these at different framework attributes numerically, but each one of the cells has some comments in it. So if you hover over a cell and pull up some of the comments, I can pull up my version here. Maybe we can just read through them from here. It might be easier. Make sure my laptop's not blocking my microphone. Okay. All right, we'll start first with the environmental data coding specification. What this is a, I'll describe it briefly. It's a glossary of terms where broader than, lesser than type relationships are captured for a number of different terms that are germane to modeling an environment, terrain, weather, hydrographic effects, things of that nature. It was built for an effort to support neutral authoring or translation between other geospatial reference models that are already existing. It's got a number, the overall effort has a number of different tools. This is the glossary, which is what we chose to evaluate here, which is sort of like an ontology. The first thing we measured was, is this actually called an ontology? And it's not, mostly because the community that uses this is alien to the concept of what an ontology is and what you consider to be an ontology. As far as structure, on a 1 to 5, we ranked it as a 4. It's fairly well structured, fairly well put together. It's not formal, the structure of the environmental data coding specification, but it is normative. I'm not sure if I'm catching the distinction there. As far as expressiveness, we gave it a 3. Some of the comments or observations from the group was were that it was easily as expressive as something like OWL or Protégé. The granularity is reasonably coarse. It doesn't really go below broad term level in defining the meanings behind things. Its use was for neutral translation. Some complex reasoning is possible here because of the relationships, the broader and lesser relationships, but that's probably the extent of it. It's prescriptive, so I would suppose that means it's a strict design, a strictness category, and its design was top down. They had in mind what they wanted to show with this when they started and approach it from that perspective. The second ontology we looked at was an ontology, and I'll let Doug jump in here a little bit, but this was an ontology that was developed to explain what was done in a geospatial markup language tool. So the tool itself was already in existence, and then was it Drexel? Drexel University came back and developed an ontology to explain this markup language and the relationships and structure of the language itself. And what we did was evaluate that ontology, not necessarily the markup language itself. This is definitely called an ontology. The documentation starts out calling it an ontology, and the use community refers to it as such. Again, high in structure. Some of the observations were that is easily as structured as anything that you could approach from a tool like Protégé or something of that nature, where you're limited to strict structure and strict relationship formats. It's very expressive. There was some comment here about, for expressiveness, would the amount of scientific specificity behind the elements and relationships, would that account as being expressive? If the relationships and elements of an ontology represented very, very well-defined scientific concepts from another domain or another area, could you consider that to be expressive if the ontology itself were not necessarily very mathematically expressive? That's where our group went with that. It's got a very fine granularity. Its use was for the integration of data sets and models. Now, this was, as far as reasoning, the group assumed that this can support complex reasoning, but from the perspective of that it was developed as an upper-level ontology. And we were wondering if there was a difference in evaluation for reasoning from an upper-level ontology, which is our group assumed is supposed to serve as the model or tie-together point for other lower ontologies and more specific ontologies, versus a lower ontology which was maybe designed specifically for reasoning. This is very descriptive, so it's very loose. It doesn't solve to answer all the questions in the world about geospatial modeling, the ontology. It was specifically done just to model the relationships and entities in this markup language. And the design, again, was top-down. So, Doug, any comments? Any?
I think that pretty much gets it. Again, it turned out to be a top-level ontology within the geospatial domain, and so it's intended to be extended, intended to build other ontologies under it. But at the other, with respect to this reasoning issue, there's a pretty clear implication. None of us are experts in this, but there's a pretty clear implication that they want to take these different data sets and use that as a way to automatically extract the things in common. So that's what caused our confusion there, or the point anyway.
Yeah, it seems to be built as an upper-level ontology, but with one specific case serving as its source material or its source data. Just an overall observation. We thought that the framework attributes were good. What we thought was weak was a definition of scale, or maybe being limited to just a linear scale.
Who's going to volunteer for the medical group?
Okay, this is the medical. You seem to have a column hidden. There, okay. So we looked at two ontologies in the medical domain, MeSH and the gene ontology. For structured, we just saw this as being very structured. It's very, very, everything in the MeSH is rigorously reviewed and controlled by the National Library of Medicine. And so we concluded that this was a very formal, very structured ontology. Then with respect to the expressiveness, this fit exactly with the notion of a thesaurus, where the relationship is the narrower than, broader than relationship, and it seemed like a really good fit as a in that particular category. Then moving over to granularity, okay, in that column, it varies in the level of granularity. We were just looking at the granularity as a hierarchy. I actually checked. It's not 12 or 13. It's actually 11. It's at the depth of the hierarchy is 11 in this case. on the other hand, I think if you go down further, a little farther down, we had some comment about this. We weren't sure exactly how to interpret granularity. If you think of this in terms of the community that it serves, they would regard this as being fairly coarse. Granularity of concepts. On the other hand, as an ontology by itself, being, having 11 layer, 11 levels, depth 11, that means it is classifying at a fairly fine level, a fairly fine amount. So if you just look at it within the ontology, it seems like it's classifying to a fine level, and therefore fine granularity should be the classification here. But just within the community, it's considered quite coarse. Yes?
I guess we should sort of scale it from the user's perspective, which means you should say it's coarse.
Yes, from the...
No, I mean, you need to take into account the intended use. I mean, if you take Mesh for its intended use, which is to index the literature, it's probably fine-grained enough. If you use it in a clinical system to record diseases and things like this, it's not going to work. Okay, but that's not what it is for.
That's right. In the intended use, it is a fine granularity. So then go back up again to the... Right, okay, so... moving over to intended use, its intended use is for tagging and indexing of the biomedical research literature. That's the stated purpose of Mesh. Then moving to reasoning, there isn't any notion of reasoning within this within Mesh. There's no logic of any kind. Then moving to strictness, we had some trouble understanding this one. It seemed like it was just a subset of intended use. The intended use here is descriptive in that it's informally tagging research papers, although there is a fairly rigorous and strict methodology that they employ to try to make the tagging as precise as possible. But, nevertheless, it seems like descriptive is the appropriate term for this. Then going to design, this is...
We need to leave here in about 2 to 3 minutes. So
yeah, okay, so I'll move up quickly. The design is very complex. It was designed bottom-up, top-down, and horizontally. It's actually the merger of something like 17 sub-vocabularities. Which makes it the design methodology a very complex one. Then let's take a look at gene ontology, so quickly go through those. Again, it's a highly structured and controlled vocabulary. Then the expressiveness is, this is a formal subclass hierarchy. It has both ISA and part of relationships within the ontology. Moving right, the granularity there is fairly fine granularity. It's considered pretty fine, although within subcommunities it's not quite good enough for some purposes. So we kind of figured on a scale of 1 to 5 it would be about 4. The purpose is to annotate genes and gene products. The reasoning is a simple ISA and actually also part of reasoning, although there's no logic built into Go beyond these two notions of ISA and part of. Strictness, this is a prescriptive within the context of this intended use, and its design seems to be mostly top-down, although it's pretty clear that there are also bottom-up aspects in the way that this was designed. So that's all for the biomedical ontologies.
So we want to go upstairs. Where is this thing? Downstairs, down the hall. Okay, we're all going to follow the Piper here.
For those who are on the phone, we're closing this session, and we will return at 10:30, 10:40 for the continuing session.